ద్వీపానాం
ద్వీపానాం
సంభవ
సంభవ
ఏచ ఓకసాం
ఓకసాం
భూపతాల కచుక్కకు వ్యోమ గ్రహ నక్షత్ర భూభృతాం
గ్రహ నక్షత్ర భూభృతాం
సరిత్ సముద్ర ద్వీపానాం
సరిత్ సముద్ర ద్వీపానాం
సంభవశ్చైతలోకసాం
సంభవశ్చైతలోకసాం
భూపతాల
భూపతాల
underneath the land
కఠు
the four sides of the heavens.
The four sides of the heavens.
Yoma.
Yoma.
The sky.
Braha.
Braha. The planets.
Planets.
Nakshatra.
Nakshatra.
The stars. Bhubritam.
Bhubritam.
Of the hills.
Sarit.
The river. Samudra.
Samudra.
The sea.
Dvipanam. Dvipanam.
Of the islands. Sambhava. Appearance. Cha. Also. Eta.
Eta.
There.
Orkasam.
Orkasam. Of the inhabitants. Translation. O best of the Brahmas, please also describe how the creation of the globes throughout the universe, the four directions of the heavens, the sky, the planets, the stars, the mountains, the rivers, the seas, and the islands, as well as their different kinds of inhabitants, takes place. Purport. The inhabitants of different varieties of land, and so forth, are differently situated, and not all of them are equal in all respects. The inhabitants of the land are different from the inhabitants of the water or the sky. And similarly, the inhabitants of the different planets and stars in the sky are also different from one another. By the laws of the Lord, no place is vacant, but the creatures of one particular place are different from those of other places. Even in human society, the inhabitants of the jungles or the deserts are different from those of the cities and villages. They are so made according to different qualities of the modes of nature. Such adjustment by the laws of nature is not divine. There's a great plan behind the arrangement. Maharaj Parikshit requests the sage, the great sage, Shukadeva Goswami, to explain all these authoritatively in accordance with proper understanding. Om again, Tanandasat, Jana Shakra, Chakra, Matan, Kazma, Shri, Kudavarina. Maharaj Parikshit is asking questions in this chapter. And by his questions, he's clearing the way for our understanding. By his questions, he's showing what is important. He's showing what you should try to see and understand. And if you study throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, the questions asked by Maharaj Parikshit, you'll get a feel for what is actually important in your life and in the cosmos. At first it's going to seem a little strange because you'll see that Maharaj Parikshit's questions don't concern things that you may think are so important. So then you have to decide who has the better vision. When you make the adjustment in your life for seeing how the things Maharaj Parikshit is asking are the most important thing, then you start to experience a readjustment in your vision of yourself and how you fit into the scheme of things. So in this way, we're so dependent on Maharaj Parikshit. We're dependent on his questions to train us, ourselves, how to focus our vision, how to see. And we're dependent on Shukadeva Goswami for the answers. In this way, in this dialogue between the best of the Brahmanas, Shukadeva Goswami, and Richard Maharaj, he's saying again, we get so much benefit. How you look at things is very important. The Bhagavatam is teaching you to look at your life, to look at the world and the universe in a different way, so you can see what's really going on. two people can look at the same thing and see something completely different. It's like someone made a witty saying about the Bible, people's approach to the Bible. We both read the same book day and night. You read the black and I read the white. That's an example of how people can look at the same thing and get different understandings. Of course, Bhagavad Gita is very difficult to interpret in different ways because Bhagavad Gita is so precise. The Sanskrit is very simple, precise, and clear. So you have to go through great endeavor to misinterpret Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says clearly throughout Bhagavad Gita, think of me, surrender to me, become my devotee. Now, how are you going to twist Krishna out of that? Takes a lot of work. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada gave us his Bhagavad Gita as it is, just as Krishna has spoken, with no alterations. Other scriptures, they're not so clear. Therefore, there's so much room for theological argument and interpretation. Bhagavad Gita is not like that. At the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, abandon all varieties of what you think is Dharma or religion and just do what I want. That's the ultimate instruction of Bhagavad Gita. And of course, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the most confidential instruction is that you should always think of Krishna and become his devotee. As we discussed last night, to be a devotee of Krishna means to be always absorbed in Krishna. Our thoughts, our activities, our desires, our wishes. That's what we're trying to learn here. Just like, for example, when you take care of Tulsi, that's becoming absorbed in Krishna. Who takes care of the Tulsi? When Tulsi Devi is so green and luxurious, that means there's bhakti. But that is one way to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness by pleasing Krishna's dear devotee Tulsi Devi. And as we've been discussing through the event, by concentrating on giving Krishna to others, you save yourself from selfishness. Selfishness is a very miserable condition. It seems like it's attractive, doesn't it, to be selfish? Even for me. I'll give a little bit of time, isn't that good? Maybe it's me I'm interested in. I get it. I'm sensitive in my mind. I like it. How are people thinking of me? What are they doing for me? Seems like that's the way to go. But a selfish life is a rule. Any decent person who drives a selfish life finds out it's very unfulfilling, boring, miserable. So then people get another idea that maybe we shall be charitable. That's nice. At least there's some expansion of the selfishness beyond yourself. You expand it to your bodily relations. I'll help my people. I'll help New Zealanders. I'll help women. I'll help men. I'll help my family. I'll help my society. I'll help the animals in my land. Expanded selfishness. If you don't know anything better, then you'll become offended by this, by them criticizing this charity work, this welfare work, which we're being selfless, we're thinking about it. You have to be a bit expert in transcendental knowledge to see how the so-called charity work is simply in relation to your own self, because it's done in terms of expansions or extensions of your bodily existence. What else can you do? You don't know the art of how to help every creature. Just like this verse is describing how there's life everywhere. So why should we simply be concerned with the women of Wellington or the creatures of New Zealand? even all the human beings on this planet. There is life everywhere, in every nook and cranny, in every dimension. How are we going to help all the creatures? That is the vision of the Krishna conscious person, and that is possible to achieve and to fulfill. So we were discussing how two different persons can look at the same thing and see something completely different. Yesterday we talked about how when you see the different aspects of nature, the sun, the moon, you should not simply see just heavenly bodies. You should see destinations. Every time you look at nature, you should see destinations. Not simply when you look at the sun or the moon or the star or the sun. Anywhere in nature you look, the forest, the trees, the ground, the air, anywhere is full of life, whether you can see it or not. That means wherever you look in nature, you're looking at different destinations, which have been arranged for the embodied living entities according to what they deserve. So we're trying to teach you how to see differently. Just like Jenny sent me this this emblem for the Gaur Yoga Center. I just looked and I couldn't figure out what it was. And then yesterday, or the day before when I came, I was just looking and what is this? I can't figure out what it is. He said, don't you see this? The folded palms or something? And you know, like a pranam. I said, I can't see that. So finally I realized that I couldn't see it. I was just focusing on the yellow or the gold and not the white. Anyone else had that experience? You did too. You did too. I just couldn't see, you know. But then if I would look at I looked at the white, and then after a while it made sense. So that's an example of people looking at the same thing and seeing differently. How many of you saw the palms immediately? So it's about 60-40. 40% of us didn't see, 60% did. So, anyway, from the advertising point of view, that's not such an effective advertisement. 40% of the people missed the message. Maybe if you put some, if you can see the fingers on the hand, put some more detail in there. Like this, you can see that. When you look at someone's hand folded, like you see leaking from the side, you just see some of the skin fingers. But anyway, here's an example. You can look at the same thing and see something that you did. Srimad Bhagavatam will train you to look at nature and see what's really going on. See the struggle for existence. See the different destinations that await you. The destinations are there for you. They're not just there, irrelevant to you. No. When you look at nature, you should see different possibilities for yourself. Where are you going? Is it to a home in the grass? Is it underground? Is it to a home under the ocean? Is it to a home in the commode? This is not my story, but my householder in Mayapur told the story during the Mayapur Festival this year. There was a man who was very attached to his wife, and then he died, and he was brought before Yamaraj, and Yamaraj said, well, what do you want? And the man said, Yamaraj explained to him that, you're not going to be a human being. You just didn't do enough to merit another human body. So, I'm going to tell you right now, Yamaraj said, that you're going to be, some kind of bug or something like that. But I'll give you a choice. Where do you want to be? You're going to be a bug, a cockroach, or something like that. a worm or something. And where do you want to be? So the man said, well, you know, no matter what body I take, I have to be near my wife. I can't stay away from her. So Yamaraj said, all right, remember, it's not my story. Okay, which room of, you can be a worm or a cockroach in her house. Now, which room would you like to be? Would you like to be in the bedroom? The man thought about it.
No,
not this time, not close enough. So, I was all right, right? Bedroom's not close enough. Would you like to be in the kitchen? She's always cooking in the kitchen. Man thought, kitchen? Nah, to be a cockroach or a worm in the kitchen. Not close enough. So then Yamaraj was kind of puzzled, according to the story. Now, would you like to be in the commode? And be a cockroach in the commode, you know? Be a cockroach in her commode. The man thought about it. No, not close enough. So then, Yamaraj said, well, there's not many rooms in the house left. You don't want to be near the commode, but how about near the bathroom sink? And then thought about, well, that's getting closer. Yeah, near the bathroom sink. So then, Yamaraj said, okay, the bathroom sink. The mirror? A cockroach around the mirror or a worm around the mirror?
No, not the mirror. That is. No.
On the counter?
No, not there. I'm getting close.
Then Yamaraj said, well, how about in the, what do you call it, the drain pipe going down from the sink in the bathroom? Yes, that's it. That's what I want to be. I want to be a worm or a bug that's able to live in the drain pipe that's coming from the sink, you know, the bathroom sink. And I said, okay, so be it. You can be some kind of water bug living in the drain pipe coming from the bathroom sink, you know, her bathroom sink. And that was Texas. I'm not a human being, but I'll be a water bug in that drain pipe in her bathroom sink. So that acted, Yamaraj gave him that judgment. But could you please explain to me why you're so happy? You're not a human being, you've lost your human form of life. You're going to be a water bug or something inside the drain pipe, right? As a pipe leads from the basin of the sink. Why are you so happy? And I said, because I'll be so close to her. I'll be so close to her. Okay, I can't be a human being, but still I'll be with her. And Yamaraj, I don't understand this. Can you please explain? The man said, yes, it's her bathroom sink. And what she'll do every morning is, you know, rinse out her mouth and gargle. And then, you know, into the sink, and I'll be in the drain pipe. It'll go all over me. I'll be so close. I'll be with her. What could be closer than that? all the saliva will be just, you know, everything, you know. It'll just flow over me. I'll be there in this drain pipe. Anyway, it's not a story from Shastra. I didn't make it up. The householder told it. Made it more effective. If a Sinazi had told that. But it was a married man who told it. So... the point is that, yes, you get reactions. And everywhere you look is full of destinations. Even your commode or the bathroom sink drain pipe, that is a destination. There's life everywhere. What about the animal rights of the creatures inside the drain pipes? So we should learn to see nature is full of destinations, and we should think, where will I be going? What will my next destination be? We should not just idly walk through nature. Oh, this is a nice park, nice flowers, nice trees. And neglect to see the struggle for existence that's going on. How the creatures are living fearful lives. The birds are so fearful. Come near them, they fly away. There's a fierce struggle for existence. One living entity is food for another. Jibo Jibo Sujibo. That's the story of existence. The weak are the subsistence for the strong. And there's always someone stronger. So one living entity is food for the other. And then there are different destinations. Not only the globes throughout the universe, as described in this verse, but the four directions of the heavens, the sky, the planets, the stars, the mountains, the rivers, the seas, the islands, all have different kinds of inhabitants. So what is the grand plan behind these different residential areas? As Prabhupada writes in the purport, that such adjustments by the laws of nature, such adjustment by the laws of nature is not blind. There's a great plan behind the arrangement. Now you have to think, how do you fit into that plan? You may think, oh, I'm a nice person, I'm okay. Not the best, not the worst. That's all right, but how does that fit into nature's plan? And what will your next body be? You should think like that. A yogi is one who tries to control the next destination. We discussed yesterday, last night, about how a yogi is one who controls the senses according to a predetermined plan. Now, just like when you have yoga classes, the teachers, they have some idea what they're going to tell the students to do, right? Well, you have to do that for your life. You have to have a plan, how your senses are going to act. In a yoga class, you have a plan for how the senses of the students are going to be engaged. So, with your own life, you have to have a plan for how your senses are going to be engaged. You can't give up the responsibility for making a predetermined plan for your senses. That's what bhakti yoga is about. So that plan should involve all aspects of your life. And you control your senses according to that plan. Just like when there's a fast day, you have to plan. You're not going to eat during the day. Or there can be plans at a longer range. A nice example is Tim, our Bhakta Tim. He's a noble man. He always had a plan. I'm going to be a brahmacharya for 5 years from now. So he stuck to that plan. He did book distribution solidly for 5 years. And he's still doing that. And then he said, okay, I'm ready to marry. But where's the best possible person? This way. That's how you live life. You have some vision, some plan, and you try to act according to that. For your real self-interest, which is to become Krishna conscious. You make plans for Krishna's pleasure. How to situate yourself so you can give pleasure to Krishna. I'm happy that you all now are calm enough to reflect upon your life and make a plan how you can effectively engage in business service, taking care of your mental and physical needs, a balanced life. That's very good. Similarly, you should have a plan how you're going to achieve a certain destination in your next life. The younger you start on this plan, the better. But you can't allow yourself to be completely thrown off track by the disturbances of material nature. Disturbances of material nature means, first of all, your own body and mind, the adiatmic miseries. You have to be smart enough to understand your body and mind is a disturbance and you have to handle it, not surrender to it. But you have to get on top of it. Similarly, disturbances in material nature, adhidaivika. It's going to be there. You can't let that disrupt your life. And adhyatmik, excuse me, adhibhautik, disturbances from other living entities. You can't let that knock you out of shape. If you don't have a plan, a predetermined plan, it's very difficult how to survive these threefold miseries, which are always shaking you off course. You need to make a plan for your enlightenment, your Krishna consciousness, your development of lower Krishna, which will carry you through all the tossings and turnings of the waves in the ocean. Now, if you just jettison your plan as soon as there's some disturbance, that's not very good. The purpose of having the plan is to hold on to it through the rocking, through the upsets. That's the purpose of the plan. Not that, well, when things are nice and there are no disturbances, then I follow the plan. But as soon as there are some disturbances and upsets, charade, the plan goes. Everyone can understand that. And I'm following my plan because there are disturbances, you see? No, it's not like that. The plan is to protect you when there are disturbances. Therefore, we say every day chant at least 16 rounds. Every day follow the regular principles. Not that you follow the regular principles when you don't feel agitated, but as soon as you feel agitated, then out the window again. No. In all circumstances, be a yogi. That is Krishna's advice to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. Tasmad yogi bhavarjuna. Arjuna, in all circumstances, be a yogi. Not just, you know, fair weather. It's like in Wellington, you have to be prepared to go about your affairs in all kinds of weather. Sunny, windy, rainy, whatever. It can change several times in the day, but you called up your boss and said, well, you know, it's a bit windy out there today, I don't think I'll be able to come in today. Or Tracy, you called up your office and said, you know, a lot of rain out there, isn't it? I think it's a bit much for me. Everyone would say, hey, you know, get real. You're living in Wellington, you know. Life goes on, business goes on, our affairs go on. You expect that, you know, your rain is your life, so you can deal with rain. You expect that, you know, you have your rainwear, your Gore-Tex or whatever, and you expect you're able to deal with the wind. You've got a windproof umbrella, you know, that doesn't invert. They sell those umbrellas in Wellington that have holes in it so that the wind passes through. Yeah. You know, people expect, you know, hey, you're living in Wellington, you're supposed to be prepared about that. Similarly, you should know that you're living in the material world, so you should be prepared with your plan, with your sense of duty, with your scheme for how you're going to apply your senses. And it's easy to have that plan when you actually see what's going on around you, when you actually see what material nature is. It's a whole arrangement, ordered arrangement of destinations. Everybody gets their destination, whether it's the bug in the commode, or the ant in the anthill, or the human being on Earth, or the countless living entities in different dimensions on different stars and planets. There's life everywhere, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. The living entity, the characteristic of the soul, is sarvaga. It can go anywhere. It's everywhere present. There's nowhere where there's not life. There's no planet, there's no dimension, there's no space where there's not life. It may not be life as you know it, but there's life everywhere. Krishna gives you that assurance in the Gita. And later in the Gita, what does the Lord say? Sarva yoni shukamitya. Mortya sambhantya. Ta sambhamanajyonya. You should know, Arjuna, that all species of life, as they appear in material nature, have one seed-giving father, that's me. Krishna is such that he can expand himself into living entities and not be depleted. Generally, you think that if someone gives off energy, they have less. It's like if you observe yourself in yoga or swimming or walking. Then you have burned calories. You have less. You have to take in. But Krishna is not like that. He has unlimited energetic expansions. Energies. But he never becomes depleted. Because Krishna is not a material substance. Material substances become depleted. And Krishna does not. We need to remember that. Bhagavad Dharma, the science of God, means to understand the Lord and His energies. The Lord is such that He's never depleted by His energetic expansions. Nor does He come under the control of His energies. Therefore, Krishna can come into the material world and not be affected. Krishna can reside in your heart as a super soul, but He's not affected. Everything is His energy, and He's Mayish. He's the master of all the energies, the controller of all the energies, all the different Mayas. So, the Lord is never affected negatively. A common example given is just like the Prime Minister can go into a prison, but not be subject to all the prison activities and laws. The Prime Minister is there to visit, not to come under the control of the prison regulations. So that's a crude example for what Krishna does when he comes to this world. He doesn't come under the effect of the laws of nature. In fact, in his pastimes, you'll see that Krishna is always violating the laws of nature, but doing it in a very pleasing way, so that his intimate devotees continue to remain in touch with the sweetness of the Lord's pastimes. In Vrindavan, the Lord always maintains that sweetness, so that the residents of Vrindavan always think he's our darling boy, Praja Janaranjana, the Soda Nandana, he's the son of Yasoda, Nanda Nandana, the son of Nanda Maharaj, Gopi Janavala, he's the dearmost, he's the beloved of the gopis. They always see him in that way. Even when Krishna does wonderful things, killing demons in the forest, lifting Govardhana. Sometimes Mother Yasoda thinks, actually, it must have been Nanda Maharaj that held up Govardhana, not Krishna. Krishna is my little boy, 50 such a thing. Actually, never mind what I saw, or what anybody else saw, it must have been Nanda Maharaj. And the Yamala Arjuna trees were knocked down by a strong wind. It wasn't that Krishna had anything to do with it. The resident of Vrindavan just wanted to be in contact with this intimate, spontaneous love of Krishna, devoid of appreciation of his opulences. In Dwarka, in Mathura, the devotees are fascinated by Krishna's opulences, his power and majesty. But in Vrindavan, the only opulence there is grass and cows and trees and rivers. Learning the science of God, that is the most fascinating thing. You have the opportunity by studying Srimad Bhagavatam to learn the science of God. Not just to be some kind of child who says, I believe in God. Yes, I think there's a God. That is just the very, very beginning of human life. Doesn't mean any substantial achievement. Yes, I think there's a God. I believe in God. Big deal. Of course, most of the time you don't even get that much from people these days. Where is your obligation to study the science of God? That is your right as a human being. And if you don't execute that right as a human being, nature will take away your human body. That's what's going on. That's the system of things. That's the scheme of things. So we should want to learn the science of God and give others a chance to understand the science of God. Who is Krishna? Why does Krishna do what he does? How does he do it? How does he have a material creation without becoming affected by it? These are questions that you should be concerned with. And when you become inquisitive about Krishna, then you're starting to experience all the answers. Any questions? Different groups, individual and different situations, has to be discussed. Here we're giving everyone personal guidance so we can discuss these things. The purpose of the guidance is to train you so that gradually you'll know how to best serve Krishna, even without being told. At the beginning, you have to be told. It's like a child. So it's like, now do this, now do that. But the goal is that after you become sufficiently advanced, if you can say that that'll be, is that you can develop a sensitivity for it, knowing how to please Krishna best. That's a pleasure for the parents. When the children start doing the right thing, even without the parents telling them, then the parents can, so to speak, sit back and just enjoy their children doing so many things. Can't you see that from the material point of view? That's what's crazy. From the material point of view, wouldn't your parents have liked to have seen that you took all their directives to heart and just now are just carrying them out? You get satisfaction from that. Yes. She's been working very hard like a fool. She's having different relationships, and when they don't suit her, she tosses the person out. You know? She's sifting through many men to get to the one who will be our son-in-law. And then she'll stick with that person. Huh? Yes. Have lots of babies who are born into ignorance, who have no idea why they're in this world or where they're going. So, that satisfaction is tried for a material life, that the children are carrying out our priorities. She's being a good citizen, she's not doing anything too weird. Not becoming too religious, but she's mindful of the need that you shouldn't cheat on your income tax and put money in the parking meters and like that. Now, whether there's a God or not, that's not a major concern. Main thing is to be a good person. Well, just like that, desire is their material life. Similarly, it's their spiritual life. That when devotees actually know what to do. Of course, if they don't know what to do and they pretend they know what to do, that causes havoc. But they actually know what to do. That's very nice. And then they can train others, and that's how things expand. It's like Carrie was the first lofty. Trained her, and now she's training others. Hopefully, others will train others, and this thing is gone. Naturally, you expect that it's not going to all work out ideally all the time. People do go off track. But anyway, that's the idea. Okay. Anyway, if you have a chance to get personal guidance, take advantage of it. Get it while you can. Bhakti yoga dissolves the false ego. But yes, you have the independence to expand your false ego. It's like a tumor, the false ego. But that's a very advanced stage of devotional service. And your gross and subtle lives become pretty spiritualized. In the beginning stages, you have to be mindful of your subtle body in terms of mind, intelligence, ego, and how it affects things. And you keep it engaged in Krishna service. So it's a bit premature for a young devotee to go around thinking, I've dissolved my subtle body. Better you think, how can you engage in Krishna service? How can you use your senses according to the predetermined plan? Yes?
No, I was just saying yesterday that if we were driving on the road, we had hands off the wheel, close to the eyes, so no one would agree to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be dangerous. Sometimes in devotional service that happens, even unwillingly, say some accident or something. So, what's the best thing to do?
Devotional service means being attentive. That's what it means. Devotional service means being attentive. But sometimes you become overwhelmed by past conditioning. So, Krishna understands, spiritualized understands what is the situation in which one becomes overwhelmed by one's past conditioning. That's a bit of a bang. What do you call it?
A prang.
That's a bit of a prang. Yeah. Show up with your fenders dented a bit. And there's a difference between when that just kind of happens due to just got overwhelmed by past conditioning or actually planned and willful. But you should be attentive in execution of devotional service. Why take your eyes off the road? Your hands off the steering wheel. But as we're and then you're off somewhere trying to do something with Krishna, and you walk into a room full of smoke, and then someone just hands you a cigarette and says, hey, got the popcorn. Kind of get overwhelmed by past conditioning, habit energy. Oh, I got you. So, doesn't mean you become a demon. It just means, you just have to learn to be more attentive. But if you willfully, I'm going to go to a place with lots of cigarette smoke, and I know when I get there, someone's going to hand me a cigarette. Well, that's something else.
Help. And you talk about Krishna doing that, isn't it?
being sort of not self, you know, being self-absorbed and helping me by talking about Krishna.
I don't understand.
You made a fool before, you can't actually help everybody. But you have a chance to.
Materially, you can't help everybody. Krishna consciousness, you can help everybody. Because you're watering the tree at the root. You can't understand how your efforts at devotional service are helping all living entities. But that's what's happening. You are applying your energies to the root of the cosmos. So you're helping everything in the cosmos, but you can't see that yet. Is that what you meant? You have to decide why are you living your life. You have to decide that. What are you doing with your life? What do you hope to achieve? You have to decide that. Do you care for yourself, first of all, and then do you care for others? And if so, what do you plan to do for yourself and others? Sooner or later we have to wake up and come out of the clouds, you know. For some, it's a gradual process. Takes a while. Conditioning is very big. But you can speed the process up by being willful about it. So what is it that you hope to achieve?
Nirvana?
Yeah!
The realization that I'm not the body.
That's the ABCs of spiritual life, beginning in first grade. Okay, then you have to be prepared to work for that goal. You have to do the things that will give you that understanding and experience. But if you're not the body, what are you? You can't just live a negative life.
That's why I'm starting to realize that I'm not the body.
Well, what are you? If you understand what you are, it'll help you to not try to be what you ain't. So what are you?
I'm trying to realize that I'm
Then you have to do spiritual activities. Not a theoretical thing, you know. Absorb yourself in spiritual activities, bhakti yoga, and then you'll understand what you're not and what you are. So that's what you should do. No need to be so mental, you know. Certain action program you need to follow. It's like Arjuna on the battlefield. Is it possible? So you should try to bring your life under control. Not that it's like a runaway kite on a windy day. Yes. Let's speak louder. Give me an example. Gaur Yoga Center. Well, that's just management, you know. Just because you have a plan doesn't mean everything the world's going to conform to it. But at least you had a plan. You have to be flexible. That's just part of management. Ask Jen to give you a management course. She's becoming more flexible. So. It's just common sense, these things, you know. It's like you and Adam have a plan. You're going to live a certain way, at least for a while. Okay. Have a plan. Fine. Every situation has advantages and disadvantages. Anything else? Knowledge of what?
Material that happens.
If you're trying to fix your car, what's wrong with using logic and, you know, deduction? How can logic and deduction help when you're dealing with things beyond your senses? Apply it and get the result. Apply your critical intelligence. Use your critical intelligence to apply what you read in the scriptures, and then you'll see the results. You hear, apply your senses according to what you hear, you'll get the experience. Isn't that fair enough? It's like I was telling yesterday. Feel your body has a mission. A human body has a mission. Now you can feel so many things with your human body. You can feel its pushings, its urgings. But what about the need for enlightenment? You should feel that with your body. I have a human body. I must become Krishna conscious. Feel that. Carry it out with your senses. Or Krishna says, Rasoham Apsukantya. Krishna says he's the taste of water. So when you drink water, you think Krishna is the taste. Think it's just poetry? You'll get the experience. What's the difference with it? Doesn't that involve critical intelligence? Analyze yourself. Why do I feel a certain way? Why do I feel like I got all the time in the world to do whatever I want? Where does that feeling come from? It's an illusion. Analyze it based on what you read in the Shastra. But as we were saying yesterday, if you can't even understand material nature that's around you, what makes you think you can understand the spiritual nature? Therefore, you hear and you use your critical intelligence to apply what you hear, and then you'll get the experience. It's not blind faith. The knowledge comes down, and you hear it and apply it. You get the experience. Isn't that fair enough? It's like I tell you to do certain things. If you do them, you get the experience. That's the big deal. Yes, you can read. Prithu Maharaj is explaining the proportionate accumulation of reactions resulting from the different modes of material nature act upon the desiring living being. So try to see that. Is Sue acting under the influence of goodness, passion, or ignorance? And try to understand that. Are you giving me an example?
Sometimes
Oh, that's not such a critical thing. Also, you use the mysterious.
But if you use it in other situations, because you have maybe a body part from.
Yeah, these are not. Devotees shouldn't persecute each other about these things, you know? That's good. You know, just like, make big things about how these things. Sometimes, you know, like little kids, you know. Playing with you, stumbling around in the room with it. It's not a big deal.
And so if you haven't read it, you can't say, you know, how much.
Well, if you're smart, that's a good idea. That's a good attitude. If you're smart. But that involves sense control. It's an austerity. That's the smartest way to go about things. I don't know that everybody wants to be that smart. Anyway, Jen has a program to go to. She has a resident. So. Yes, you're smart if you think, unless I've been given knowledge, why should I worry about speculating? Here's a good example I always give. I was with Subhag Maharaj in Mayapur, and we were on top of a building, and we were looking out at Prabhupada's Samadhi, which has a huge dome, and it was just about to be finished, so there was still scaffolding high up in the air on this dome. So I was looking at the scaffolding on the dome, you know, through typical Western eyes. That was, it just, the example shows you the difference between the East and the West. You know, of course, nothing was wrong with my vision, it was just, you know, it's a scaffolding on its own, so I just wondered. You know, I said, how do they get, look at that scaffolding high up on the dome. How do they get that down? You know, it's a normal way to think from, Westerners think that's the only way to look at the situation. So I was saying that, and Subhag Maharaj just kind of looked at me. Those who have put it up, they will know how to bring it down. That's an Indian way, you know. Wait, no, why should he worry? There's an authority behind everything. Those who put it up, they will know how to bring it down. So that shows you there's different cultural ways of looking at things. Both have their value. Now, in reference to Shastra, though, that attitude is the best. Shukadeva Goswami, he knows. He will explain. So just like you're trying to figure out how to send this fax or whatever to Moscow, it's not that I'll wait until somebody tells me. You have to be a bit aggressive. Everything has a chance to be used in Krishna's service. If you don't use that kind of intelligence in terms of speculating about things that are beyond the range of your senses in terms of transcendental knowledge, or even knowledge about the material consciousness. You take the information that Shukadeva Goswami gives, apply it, you'll see. Problem is you don't, first of all, you don't hear the information, and secondly, you don't apply it. That's the problem. So we keep stressing application to you all. Apply what you read. First of all, read, and then apply it. That's why I say you don't have so much time to read so many other things other than Prabhupada's books. If you're actually reading them properly, you're trying to apply them. And that takes a lot of work. That takes, you know, effort.
Hmm?
great record that is stated by Srila Prabhupada that the main problem with Westerners is that they want to change.
That's one of the main problems is that with Westerners. One of the long list of problems. That's one of them, yeah. Particularly said in Americans. Particularly Americans, not Westerners, Americans. Whatever you do, change. You can stand in your head, do it, make a change. Westerners, he said, their problem is attachment to illicit sex life. That's their main problem. They think they can't live without it. So you're not American, so you're immune to making changes. Of course, culture is affecting everywhere in the world, the so-called American culture. So everyone likes to change.
Just when I think you put them into context, what was the context going to use now?
Anything. As he said, make a change somehow. Stand on your head, but make a change.
How does that relate to just the process of Krishna consciousness?
Everything! Change everything! So that's the American disease. That's why they have the pop culture there. Yeah. Make changes. New form of music. Hip hop, heavy metal, this, that. Change, change, change. Rap, change. Make a change. Change fashions, change this, change that. Where did you read that? Where did you read that? Hare Krishna is saying many things. The things I hear, it's like I was up at Daniel's house. I heard they're talking in the Guru Yoga Center, huh? Los Angeles, thank you. Because the airport closed, they're losing so much money. This and that. So, how do they know what's going on? They hear some zzz, 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 and then everything. Somebody else, and then. It amazes me the things I hear, you know? All spoken authoritatively, you know? I notice this is a severe reduction in that kind of stuff around here. Worry about what's in front of you. You have to become Krishna conscious. Kareem, you have a question? All right.